Hi, I'm Tedra Meyer, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited down a bit for clarity and brevity. Hope you like it. Enjoy.
In New England, homes and buildings are the second highest source of global warming emissions after transportation. Much of our housing is old, inefficient, and dependent on fossil fuels. And there's just not enough of it. This year for Earth Day, journalists from the New England News Collaborative are looking into efforts to build new housing and improve the housing we have to make it less reliant on fossil fuels and more resilient to the impacts of climate change. Now, you might have already heard some of these stories on our airwaves this week. And for the rest of this hour, we are going to talk housing and climate, too. Our focus is how to get your house or your apartment off of fossil fuels. Joining me today is T. Krug. He's a senior staff writer for Grist, a news site focused on climate and justice. He lives in Burlington, and he recently documented his own family's story of electrifying their home for Grist and The Guardian. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Michaela.
Yeah, so glad you're here. And we are also joined in the studio by Matt Sharp. Matt's a senior engineering consultant for Efficiency Vermont. He's been working with their customers to optimize buildings and energy use for more than 20 years. Matt, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Matt, let's start with some news. Just yesterday, Efficiency Vermont and Rewire America launched this new online tool for Vermont that can basically give you a customized breakdown of incentives that you could qualify for to electrify your car, your home, everything. How does it work?
Yeah, so this new tool is really exciting to have, and it's an online tool where you can go to the site and enter your household information, and you'll get a chance to input some details like what you might be interested in and your income levels. And then what you'll get as a result are a list of rebates and tax credits that are available for each of the technologies you might be interested in, and a couple hints on what other things you might consider.
Great. And there are other calculators out there. This is the first one that's like really focused on Vermont. Is that right?
Yeah. Rewire America has had this calculator available for a while. And the great thing about this version, it's customized to Vermont. So it includes Efficiency Vermont rebates, other utility rebates, and tax credits all in the same place.
Great. Well, Teek, let's turn to you. You and your wife recently went on a quest to lower your house's carbon footprint, and you documented it for your employer, which I loved. And you shared all the twists and turns of deciding what changes to make and how much they would cost your family. What did you know about climate change and the impact that one individual can have that started you down this path of electrification?
Yeah. So this is the second house we've had to like replace stuff on. And the first time was like 5 or 6 years ago. And we knew natural gas wasn't great, but we're like, you know, this is the easy choice. And so we ended up putting a natural gas boiler in. But the evidence over the last 5 years has really grown, not only on the impact of sort of fossil fuels on the climate and, you know, how we're speeding past 1.5 degrees of warming and continuing to go towards a warmer world. But what really kind of caught our attention was the studies on indoor air quality with natural gas. And the, you know, I think it's, there's a measurable percentage of children whose asthma can be linked to natural gas exposure in homes. And we were about to have a baby. So that was a big, you know, factor for us. And it actually kind of hit home sort of accidentally last summer during the wildfire smoke we were having in Vermont. We bought a air purifier filter for the first time, and every time, and we put it in our kitchen, sort of near our stove, not intentionally, but it was just the middle of our house. And every time we started cooking, the color of the air filter would change. And so that was sort of a, you know, visceral reminder of, you know, we have sort of natural gas or methane sort of coursing through our house every day. And how can we move away from that?
So a mix of your own family's personal health and then the impact that you could have on the changing climate.
Yeah. And I think it was the personal health that really pushed us over the edge. You know, we knew about it, but that personal health aspect really felt personal and visceral.
Yeah. Matt, is that something that you hear from your customers too? This concern about, you know, what our physical home is doing to our own bodies?
It is. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of improvements you could make to your building that can help with that. You know, air purifying is something that can help certainly in a particular room. But just, you know, changing your basement so that it's a dry, warm place instead of a wet, humid place can really go a long ways towards improving your indoor air quality as well.
Hmm. Well, one thing I appreciated about your article, Teague, is that you didn't try to hide the challenges of this process. I mean, it is complicated and it is expensive in many ways. I mean, we're talking at base about owning a home or an apartment and then putting up what can be thousands of dollars in upfront costs. So I just want to acknowledge that here. Now, both of these challenges have solutions, and we'll talk about those next. But first, can you tell us about those kind of initial hurdles that you face, kind of coming to grips with the scope of this project?
Yeah, I mean, I think I wish I had the tool that Rewiring America just released because I did not go into it planning as much as I should have. We started basically because our hot water heater was failing, and so we had to replace that. And so once we started to look into replacing that, we're like, oh, wait, right next to our hot water heater is a gas boiler. What can we do about that? And wait a second, our stove is gas. What can we do about that? And that started to kind of fail, and so that we started to think on that front. And then in the middle of the process, we discovered that our dryer that we thought was electric was actually gas. And so we realized how many things in our house were actually gas. And then we started to tackle them in order of both necessity and ease. And it sort of just snowballed from there. And I do wish I had done some upfront planning ahead of time, but we just kind of stumbled through it and we got, you know, I think we did a decent job, but there's definitely a few things we would have done differently, I think, from the front. And one of the biggest challenges for us has been, and I hear this over and over again when I talk to people as well, the load that new electric appliances puts on your house. And if you don't do the math up front, you could run into situations where your house doesn't have enough electric capacity to run all these new things. And that's actually a moment where I did run into, and I actually gave Matt a call and was like, how do I fix this? Planning would be one big recommendation I have for people because we didn't do it and it sort of worked out, but there definitely would have been better ways to go about it.
Mm. Well, I also will say, having read your article, I think your description of not being an adequate planner might be different from others. I mean, you ended up with like an extremely detailed multi-tab Excel document, right?
Yeah, that was by necessity, though. I did not make that at the beginning. As I started to get into this, more and more information started to flow my way. And like, you know, part of this, as you mentioned, is an economic decision. Does this make economic sense to do? And what we started to realize along the way is, yes, it would pay off if you're having to replace things anyway. So, for example, our hot water heater was dying, and it ended up being, with rebates, with federal, state, local rebates, it ended up being cheaper to put in a heat pump hot water heater than a sort of conventional one. So that made sense. And our stove was dying, and it made, you know, rough sense to put in an electric stove at that point. But where we got tripped up and where I ended up deep in the spreadsheet was with the heat pumps in particular, because our gas boiler still has life in it. And so we were trying to figure out, okay, how much is this actually going to cost us to do? And is that worth the benefit? And so I ended up looking up electricity prices and how much electricity we'd use and how that all compares, and went a little bit too far down the rabbit hole. But, you know, ended up deciding to take the leap on that front as well.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Matt, how do you help people figure out what their priorities are? Because as we're hearing from Teague, there's so many different projects you can work on. They all cost different amounts. They have different, you know, environmental impacts. How do you pick what to do first?
Well, a lot depends on what the owner can and wants to do and what their house presents. So a really good first step is to have a conversation with anyone who's interested. Potentially do a virtual home energy visit where we get on the other end of a video call and walk through the house with someone and talk about their priorities, talk about what's using energy, and help them formulate a plan that fits both saving energy and something that they can tackle and maybe give them a list of things to tackle over the years to come.
So what are some of the most impactful things to electrify in terms of lowering your fossil fuel footprint immediately, if that's your priority?
Home heating and hot water heating. Those are the two big ones for that are typically use fossil fuels, whether it be from a boiler or a water heater that's separate. So things like a heat pump hot water heater, that can replace an existing water heater without having to do the whole heating system. Maybe that's the second project. So you can break things out that are more easily attainable.
Okay. Teague, how did you decide? I know you all did the heat pumps. How did you decide what to do? I mean, within just that category, there's lots of different choices you can make.
Yeah. So the heat pump hot water heater, we had to do that because our old one was failing. And then when it came to heat pumps, we had heard through the grapevine about what are called mini splits, which are basically we don't have ducts in our house. We had a gas boiler, and so we can't just pump air through our house easily. And these have piping that runs along the outside of the house, and then they put units in each room. So we started looking at that initially because that's just what we had heard about. And that seemed to be what contractors were recommending. And so we got quotes on a few different systems. And then I started looking at it, and this is actually when I turned to Matt, is we had this system, and I gave Matt a call, and we did one of these virtual home visits, and he sort of estimated how much electricity this would use, and I was kind of like, wow, that's a lot. That's a bit more than we wanted. And then he said, but he noticed that there are ways to improve our system, and he can go into it more, but he basically made suggestions to our system that cut 30% of that electricity. And it got into a realm where we felt a lot more comfortable with what it might use. And I should add, one of the other reasons that we did this was because heat pumps provide air conditioning, which we didn't have. And as Vermont summers get hotter and you get wildfire smoke and can't open your windows, AC becomes a little bit more of a priority. So we were either going to have to buy a bunch of window units or do something like this. So that was definitely part of it as well. Hmm.
And there's a lot of incentives around installing heat pumps and hot water heaters too, right?
There are, yeah, incentives and tax credits at the federal level to help out. And just a comment about the different efficiencies of heat pumps. One thing Teak was working with in the beginning was what's called a multi-zone heat pump, where you have one or two outdoor unit and lots of indoor units, and I think there's a temptation to put a heat pump heating unit in every single room, where you can oftentimes find efficiencies and maybe cost savings by scaling that back a little bit.
Hmm. Well, we just got an email about heat pumps from James in Albany, who writes, "We have a contemporary whole house heat pump linked to our standard ducted hot air oil burner system here in the Northeast Kingdom. The heat pump works to take the heat from the frigid air, even as electric resistance heat coils in the pump unit assist it. This feature is generally not mentioned in heat pump promotional information. Perhaps, though, even the newer generation of heat pumps are best suited for areas where the cold temps don't go far below freezing." Matt, what do you think of that? Are these newer generations of heat pumps adequate for these very cold Vermont winters that we get?
Well, the heat pumps do work very well in very cold weather. The challenge is that a house loses a lot more heat in the very cold weather, and you have to have a large enough heat pump or numerous heat pumps to be able to fully heat that house all winter long without anything else. Now, most of Vermont winter is above 20 degrees, about 80% of it. And the heat pumps work really well and very efficient down to that temperature and even below. Now, if you have an old house that uses a lot more heat in the cold months, you might want to try to weatherize it to reduce that amount of heat loss. So that makes a heat pump be able to provide enough heat for the house further into the cold weather.
We just got an email from Nancy and James who write, "We built a Vermont home with consultation from Efficiency Vermont. With electric heat pumps and 22 solar collectors, we are near net zero in White River Junction." Teague, you went on a solar panel adventure, debacle. How would you describe it and how did it end up?
Yeah, so first, building new, I would love to do that because I think a lot of the problems I ran into were retrofitting an older home. And if I were to build new, I would definitely do what they did and try to just go as electric as possible. So after I talked to Matt and we realized how much this new heat pump system was going to use, the next question for us is, can we offset that with solar? And we ran into this whole cascading series of decisions we had to make, and it was very expensive. The initial quotes we were getting for our house were, between $30,000 and $40,000. And one side of our house is sunnier than the other side. And so to get the full potential, we would have had to cut down these gorgeous, 100-foot black locust trees. And honestly, the industry was a little bit, prickly. With some of how they operate. We had one solar company kind of go out of business in the middle of when we were talking with them.
No.
We had another that I just had to ask two or three times for a discount and they knocked off, $5,000+. So it was really hard to navigate and get a sense of whether we were getting a good deal or getting, how much margin and how much profit were in these solar panels. And for us, it really came down to not wanting to cut down trees to electrify. It was kind of this weird situation where we had to cut down trees to save the planet. And so we decided for now to forego solar panels. But one thing we're trying to look into is community solar and whether we can buy, solar credits from another place that has community solar elsewhere in the area. And we haven't figured that out quite yet either, but it's sort of the next road we're looking at.
I remember a line from your article where I think you wrote that your wife would rather cut off an arm than cut down one of these trees. Very visceral, but what a tough decision to have to make.
And not one we expected either going into
right.
this.
Right. Well, let's take some calls. We have Meredith from Thetford calling in. Meredith, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks very much. I have about at least 30 things I'd like to share, but I'm going to stick to the first four on the list.
All right.
And one of the things that these are the things that were surprises to me as I tried to get away from fossil fuels and go solar. And the first one is that as you're calculating the prices for what you might save by switching or what it might cost you when you switch, I made the mistake of taking my electric bill and using that amount. But about 20% of my electric bill is what they call non-bypassable charges. That is, you can't apply your solar credits towards those. But oddly, one of those things is for Efficiency Vermont, or Vermont Efficiency, I guess, in this case. And what that is a per kilowatt charge. So as you go to more and more electric, that non-bypassable charge increases on your bill and doesn't go away if you're overproducing the solar.
Meredith, I'm going to jump in here because I want to have our guest respond to your comment. I know you have lots of other things to say, but Matt, do you know what our guest Meredith was having to deal with here with their electric bill?
Yeah, there are service charges in the electric bill that your solar production can't offset. You can only offset the kilowatt hour usage that your home consumes.
And I would just add an interesting point that we ran into is that a good third of our gas bill is just being connected to the gas grid. So that's really one of our incentives to get off is we pay an 87-cent a day connection fee. And if we get off that, we're saving, $200-$300 a year alone right there.
Interesting. Well, Meredith, thank you for calling in. If you have other thoughts, please feel free to email them to us. We want to include as many voices as possible in the conversation. Ahead of today's show, we got a number of questions from listeners about things that you can do if you don't own a home, but you are renting a home. Matt, are there projects that renters could do to lower their electric bills and their dependence on fossil fuels? Or does it all come down to a landlord making those changes?
They're both. A renter can do some things that are within their control. They can seal leaks and cracks that might be seen at doors and windows. They could choose to get some window inserts that might help the windows lose a little less heat. We have a do-it-yourself rebate program. It's a $100 reimbursement of materials that it might cost you to do some of these simple projects. Maybe you weather strip your attic hatch to make that a little tighter and you insulate just that piece. That can make a difference. And we also have rebates that are available for more intense weatherization work. And these would be available to a rental property owner. And the nice thing about those now is that the rebate level is increased for rental units that are below a certain rent threshold. So instead of the income of the owner of the property being the driver, it's the rent level that's being charged to the occupants.
Teague, were there any projects that you were able to do yourself to DIY, or were these all things that we needed a professional to come in to do?
Most of them were professionals, but I did, in the course of the reporting for this article, ask a lot of people what can renters do. And one of the big things that came back was induction hot plates. So if you have a gas stove, you can actually get effectively a one burner induction stove that you can put on your countertop next to it. And we actually ended up doing this because we were for 2 weeks without a stove while we waited for our new one. And it worked remarkably well. We borrowed from a friend an IKEA hot plate that cost like $60. And we could do the vast majority of our cooking on that induction hot plate. And then you're not using natural gas and you don't have the gas in your house. And I've heard a few friends and a few people do this and they really liked it.
Hey, that's an easy one to do. Matt.
Yeah, there's also some exciting new products that are coming to market soon. New York City is doing a pilot right now with some window mount heat pump units that are cold climate heat pumps. And so these are things that would actually plug into your outlet. They'd sit inside your window. And that is a technology that a renter could take advantage of when they come, become available, which we're hoping is soon.
In the same style as like a window AC unit that we're used to these days. Mm-hmm. Huh, fascinating. Well, we just got an emailed question from a listener who says that they just renovated their home, putting in solar panels, an induction stove, and a ducted heat pump. I wanted to use a geothermal heat pump, but couldn't find anyone to even give me an estimate. As a result, I'm not generating enough solar to fully support my needs and have kept gas as a backup. Is Efficiency Vermont working to get geothermal installers for residential use? Matt.
We are, yeah. And there's a really great rebate program for ground source heat pumps and large tax credits. But one of the things we're doing is we organize an efficiency excellence network of contractors. And we try to recruit contractors to be part of that network to install efficient products like ground source heat pumps or air source heat pumps. So we're working, if you're a contractor out there doing this work, please be in touch, and we'd love to have you on board with that, too.
We did look into ground source heat pumps, too, and ran into a similar issue. We could hardly find a contractor that was familiar enough with them. And like some of them just outright said, don't do it. And the price was fairly astronomical in the $40,000, $50,000 plus range. But there's really good federal incentives. And I think that if I were building new in an area where I could, I would definitely look into it because it seems interesting. I just couldn't find someone I felt like I trusted to do the work.
Well, speaking of those federal incentives, a lot of this money is coming into Vermont from the Federal Inflation Reduction Act. There's nearly $9 billion in funding for the Department of Energy to allocate to states. Matt, do you have a sense of like how long this money is going to last? Could everybody in Vermont who might be interested in, installing a heat pump, for example, do one and still get a rebate? Or is this money going to run out?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure there's a limit to how many people can be served by it. And it is not quite available yet. I think we're still looking at some time before that becomes available in Vermont. the tax credits are available, and those do go out quite a ways.
Right.
But as far as the direct rebate to lower the initial purchase cost, those are yet to be available, and they will have a time limit.
Okay, we'll wait and see there.
And one note about the federal tax credits, one of the reasons that planning can be helpful is some of them reset every year. So if you did, for example, a heat pump hot water heater in December and then in January did your heat pumps, you would actually get two credits. There's a $2,000 credit that you could tap into twice by doing it in different calendar years.
Hmm. Well, Teague, where does your own home renovation and electrification project stand? Are there still more big things to do, or do you feel like you've wrapped up most of what your goals were?
No, we're really excited. We got a lot of it done. I would say in the nick of time. My wife would say not soon enough. But we definitely have the heat pumps in, and we took out the baseboard hot water loop on the upstairs. And so now we just have backup heat on the first floor to just see how it goes for another winter or two, and see if because we installed in February, we don't quite know what sort of a deep January cold is going to look like. But so far, we really love it. We've had to adjust our habits a little bit, because with heat pumps, you sort of set them and forget them rather than messing with the temperature. We're trying to figure out what temperature to keep the basement on so the first floor doesn't get too cold. Like, there's a few things that we're trying to work out, but generally we've been really excited by it, and we haven't even hit air conditioning season yet, and I think that'll be interesting as well.
Then maybe one piece of take-home advice for our listeners who might just be starting down a similar path as you.
Talk to multiple contractors. Getting multiple quotes and, I said the planning thing, but definitely getting multiple quotes saved us thousands of dollars. Because people have different prices for things.
And Matt, what about you? What's one piece of take-home advice for a listener who hasn't reached out to Efficiency Vermont yet, but has been hearing about all this new technology, wants to take a first step?
Well, I definitely encourage people to reach out to us, and we're here to help. I really would want to put a focus on weatherization and lowering the amount of heat your home needs. If you haven't already done that to a large extent, that can really make a difference in whether or not you switch to heat pumps. It's going to lower your bills. And then if you are going to switch to heat pumps, it enables you to buy a system that's just a little smaller than what you might otherwise have to.
And weatherization, that means insulating?
Insulation, air sealing, plugging all the leaks that are letting air escape into your attic, insulating your basement walls and the perimeter of your house as best you can.
Well, Matt Sharp, Senior Engineering Consultant with Efficiency Vermont, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Teague Rue with Grist, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Michaela.
And you can find Teague's article on the news site Grist and on The Guardian.